And you, I'm sorry, who are you? And he's like, I'm a friend of the family.
So do you feel like a friend of the family is what this movie originally was titled? And then they changed it, because the way he delivers that, that line is definitely in the trailer, right?
I'm the house guest. Yeah, no.
I'm the guest.
Starring me. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of I Finally Watched. This is David.
And this is Alon, and I finally watched The Guest.
So this is one that we have been kind of talking about for a little bit, and I don't like normally wanted to do this, but I thought it would be a good opportunity, like just doing an episode because someone passed, but Lance Reddick just recently passed, and I was like, fuck it, let's just do The Guest. We've been talking about it. And I was also kind of looking through his IMDb, and like, obviously he has, I think The Wire was kind of his like breakout thing, which is not a series I've watched yet, but
I imagine watching The Wire when I'm like 60 years old, my kids are in college or graduated, they've moved out, and I'm just like, you know what? I'll watch The whole Wire.
And they're like, what's that about? And you're like, it's about drugs and racism. And they're like, oh, well, we got rid of all that. It's like, you know, we just solved all that. That's gone.
It's like it's like the World War II movies that our parents watch.
But what I was going to say is I think like probably as of recently, probably the most notoriety he has is for like the John Wick movies, which is just kind of a pretty small part, but like a pretty, I guess, important part. He's also just got the look about him that like he seems like he could be the most intimidating person in the world, but he's also probably like the nicest person.
Like Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad.
Oh, right. I was like, who the fuck? I was like,
Well, he also has this like very like FBI federal look about him, like CEO, fuck your shit up kind of look about him. But, you know, I mean, I think this is a good opportunity just to kind of do this episode in his honor, because like you said, with John Wick, it's not a huge part, but it's a significant part. You could say the same thing about this movie, too. He doesn't have a huge role. He doesn't even come in until like the last third of the movie, but he plays a very big part in the background of the main character.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And also, this is just... So I think when we did Your Next, which was also directed by Adam Wingard, I was like, we have to do The Guest. And you, before we got into Your Next, was like, I don't really like that guy as a director. Because I think what, he did Death Note, right?
Yeah, he did Death Note. But it's not just because he did a shit Death Note. It's because his attitude towards it was like really shitty. Like he was like, oh, I didn't do a shit job. The studio wrote me into a corner, and then the general audience who watched it are nasty. I was like, stop blaming everyone except yourself. I don't know. It was just kind of his
whole attitude. But don't you think, I mean, he did it for Netflix, right? Don't you think that Netflix might have done that to him?
I mean, in all honesty, I don't see how you could save a thing like that. But I mean, but then he turns around and he does the Godzilla versus King Kong movie, which I actually really enjoyed. He has a weird Alex Wingard has a weird IMDb because he's like he kind of came out in like it's 2000. Adam. Oh, I said Alex, didn't I?
Alex Garland, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, that's who I was. Adam Wingard has a weird IMDb because he kind of came out around 2010, 2011 with Your Next. And then he did like the remake of Blair Witch. He did Death Note. He did this. And then he's like doing like multi-million dollar productions like King Kong, you know?
Well, yeah. And he also did those VHS movies, like a segment in VHS and VHS 2.
Yeah. And ABCs of Death and like a bunch of like small indie horror stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think in this day and age, unless you're like a Nepo baby who was born into the industry, a good way to break into the film industry is to do a bunch of horse shit, whether it's good or bad or mediocre. You know, I just want to say this because it kind of reminded me. I went to watch Shazam 2, Fury of the Gods, and that was directed by the same guy who did Annabelle and like involved okay. in the Conjuring stuff. And he came out with like a thing that said that he's done with superhero films after Shazam.
Yeah, I saw that.
Because he just kind of like the whole fandom of that stresses him out, like the backlash of that stresses him out. So he's going to go back to horror. And I was like, it's kind of funny because if you make a bad horror movie, there's always going to be an audience for it. There's always going to be people who like it. And the people who don't aren't going to say shit, you know?
Because they just don't like horror to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. So take Blumhouse and back to Adam Wingard, is you can't really lose when you start out in the horror genre.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, horror movies in general, and this is kind of a horror movie, basically. It's like a horror movie and a thriller, really.
Yes and no. Yeah. I mean, it has a lot of horror elements, kind of sci-fi too, a little.
Well, it also takes like a lot of elements from Halloween. So like they use the synths they use are from like Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. At certain points,
specifically Season of the Witch.
No, yeah, for sure. And then, at least according to what I read, you know, I'm not that musically inclined, so I didn't recognize it on my own. And then the Season of the Witch masks are like in the movie somewhere too.
Oh, did you see the Your Next masks in the movie?
Yeah. The composer was actually the one wearing it, and then they also wrote Your Next like in the maze.
In the haunted house thing. Yeah.
So, but yeah, this takes place during Halloween. The movie does, right? You know, they're carving pumpkins at one point. There's like it hones in on a scarecrow at one point, like with the pumpkin.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because they are living out in the middle of what seems like farmland, so that scarecrow didn't really occur to me like as it being Halloween. But then from the time, I think it was from the time they started carving pumpkins, or it was when the principal punished the kid with like the prom detail, or not the prom, the Halloween dance detail. And then I was like, okay, it takes place during Halloween. But those are the only two, and then the ending are the only places that kind of mention Halloween.
Yeah, I think I noticed it from the get-go, though, because they hone in on a pumpkin. The other thing, I think this movie is going to actually be fairly easy to like dissect. It's very dissectable scenes that are also, and I mean this in like the nicest way possible, but this is like, it's like, and this is kind of what happened. It's like two college bros got together and was like, what would be the most badass movie? And they're like, badass scene after badass scene. Yeah, he beats up this guy. He beats up this guy and says one word. You know what I mean? Like, and I that's why I love this movie.
I think that really shows in when Lance Reddick comes into the like their house and with his guys and all their machine guns. The scene where he's crawling on the ground and they are slicing the house in half with the machine guns, and you see the bullets coming out of the hallway while he's like ducking under them. I was like, that is from like a 14-year-old's wet dream, you know?
Well, the bar scene and then the scene.
Oh yeah, the bar scene too.
The scene at the party. But let's get into it. I think this movie, like, it starts out with him, David, the main character, just running on the road. And it has that music play, right? That kind of that loud, like, it's not a gong, but it's like a synth gong, almost like dong.
Well, it starts out with no music. It has zero music.
Right.
And then when the title screen comes up, it hits you so fucking hard. Like, test your volume on your TV out before that happens, you know?
Yeah, and I think the movie starts out, as most movies do, with like some exposition, but I really like it lets you know that this guy's off like right away. And I really appreciate kind of like the slow descent into that, with also just kind of like being around this family, you know. So he goes to David goes to this house, right? And it's a house of a guy that he served with who died in, you know, in battle or in action or overseas. And, you know, the mom is kind of like still not over this, right? And like the parents aren't over the death of their son, so it's maybe happened recently, or you know.
I think the daughter says, I forget what she says, but she says how long it's been.
Right. Yeah. So it's fairly recently. And he sort of just like, it's like he talks his way into getting to stay there without actually asking for it, right? Just like, you know, your son just, I came here because, you know, I promised your son, I was with him when he died, and I promised that I would come to tell you that he loved you. And she's so, just like immediately broken.
Right. Okay. So Taylor and I had a debate about this after the movie, and this happens kind of a few times throughout the movie, is that he gets to stay with the family by like denying that he wants to stay with the family. And they're like, no. They're like there's a scene later in the movie where the dad is like, so what's your plan tomorrow? And he's like, I think I'm going to go down to Miami and try to find work down there. And he goes, oh, you don't have a plan. You got to stay a couple more days. And he's like, no, sir. No. I can't do that to you. He's like, no, of course. See, I took it that he was like playing them, like saying, no, I can't possibly stay. And like the more he denies it, the more the family like asks him to stay. Eventually he's going to be like, yeah, sure. That sounds good. Right. But Taylor took it like he actually wanted to leave because he knew what he would become if he was ever caught here.
I think in the beginning, I guess I see it maybe a third way, right? I think in the beginning, he just kind of didn't. This movie does this thing that a lot of these kind of lower budget movies do, and a little bit of background on it. So the movie originally explains a lot more. It was like 20 minutes longer, and they tested it, and audience were just like, we don't need all this information. And so a lot of it's cut out, like what David actually is, you know, they say it's like the science experiment and da da da. They actually went into a lot more of like a Jason Bourne explanation of like what they did to him and why they did it to him and like his relationship with the brother. But his motivations are kind of unknown. I feel like he was fine with leaving at any point. Like if she didn't offer it to him, I think he would have left without a fight because he eventually did need to go to Miami to get this plastic surgery. But I think them offering for him to stay, you know, he kind of smiles each time they do it. It's kind of like, well, this just works out, right? Because it gives me more time to set things up.
Well, no, this just works out.
And no one knows he's here. He's in the middle of like kind of the desert or farmland. I guess it's supposed to take place in New Mexico, right? So
yeah.
It just sort of works out. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll accept this. And I then think at a certain point, he starts to like, and this is like something that I haven't watched this movie. Maybe I watched it a year ago. And I think a lot of times I just watch it because it's fucking badass. But I think this might be the first time I kind of picked up a little bit on his motivations. And I think he a little bit starts to fall for the sister. And he kind of even says that. And at certain points, maybe I thought he was playing with her. But I think like, I think he started to just kind of enjoy being here. And then he realized like, oh shit, she's on to me. And then Lance shows up because after he shows up, Lance Reddick says to her, he's programmed to tie up loose ends. So when he kills the mom later on, he's like, you know, it's just, no, I really did know your son and I really appreciate this. And he was in the program with me and he would understand that I have to do this. And then she yells to the, you know, the good guys, and Major Carver is his name in the movie, and he stabs her, right?
Right.
And you're like, that's supposed to be this turning point of like, he's a really evil character. But the movie also gives you a little bit of cop out where it's like, but would he have done that if she didn't scream out? Like, it looks like he was about to, but it's like, he starts killing these people, as the major says, because
he's tying up loose ends.
Yeah. He has to, he doesn't want to, but right. The situation is turned.
But do you think he was trying to leave before the inevitable did happen? Because as soon as the daughter is like, oh, I made this call to the military, he has to know they're on their way.
Probably. I mean, that is a little bit of like a plot hole, or like, well, how good is this guy really if he didn't know that he needed to bounce right then and there? She called.
Okay, so speaking of plot holes, There's this thing that bothers me where he like ultimately tries to make their life better right? Mm-hmm. By doing murders.
by doing murders.
by doing murders. But it's kind of all for naught, right? Like, he does all this stuff to try to make their life better, and then he fucking just ends up killing them, or killing half of them and trying to kill the other half of them in the end. I feel like at some point, nothing is gained at the end of this movie.
I think until she called, he was like, I'm going to help these guys out because I was friends with their brother. I'm going to help them. I'm going to do what's right for them. And then he's like, well, now I don't have a choice because
his brother really wants me to fuck his sister.
Because, but the most important thing to me is surviving, to not getting caught, to keeping like the program not caught, as they talk about later. So I think that's what turns, is when the major shows up, when he gets found out, he's like, well, none of that matters anymore. All that I did, it doesn't mean anything. So I think that's the turning point of that.
Yeah. But I mean, I think you can understand, this has a 92% on Rotten Tomato. It has like a crazy high score. And I think it's like pretty good, but I think I know better movies that don't even have that high of a score.
I think part of that is the surprise factor of it. Like, when I saw this movie, I had never really heard anything about it. And so it was just like sort of this revelation, right?
I guess. But like, it doesn't like tip you off that when he goes to his room, he just sits on the edge of his bed staring out the window.
So this is one thing I want to talk about, is that this movie does this thing. And so, you know, this is, like I said, this is like the first time I watched this movie with like a critical eye of like sort of dissecting it. Most of the times I just enjoyed it, right? And so the first time it goes to his room, I even wrote down a note. I was like, all right, this is a bit much. Like, with him just staring out, like, I love the music, but it's like it just stays on him too long. It's like it's too over the top. And
I think,
hold on, but then they do it 4 more times.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck it, I love it. And I was like,
no,
just commit,
no,
just
David.
I was like, I love it.
No, the thing is, though, is that I think with a lot of Adam Wingard, because Your Next has this too, where it gets kind of corny. It's a little corny. And he has some cool elements, and he has badass scenes, and the story is like pretty decent. But you get into these places where it just comes off as very corny. Sometimes it's the acting too. Sometimes the actors are just very corny actors. Like the dad in this movie is just a very corny actor. I love him, but you can't deny that he's corny as all hell.
I mean, I actually think he's playing like a very specific character. Do you know what movie of his we've done before?
Oh, no.
He was the dude who had the strap on put on him in Seven. With the knife on the end.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, I wonder if he like walks around and people are like, dude, you look at the Seven guy. He's like, that's not what I want to be known for. Although it's a Fincher movie. So
maybe
the other thing about this movie, you know, a little bit of a connection for me is, so this and It Follows come out the same year. Right. And Micah Monroe is like kind of the star of both a little bit, right? I think you could say she's probably the lead character of this movie too, the guest, or at least like co-lead with Dan Stevens. You know, it sort of becomes her movie at a certain point.
I think that's the part where it's cool. I think you can see Dan Stevens' character being bad from the get-go, like with an ulterior motive. But the switch of perspective to her, I think that part of the movie is probably why it has such a high rating, because, I mean, he's a villain, right? And even when Lance Reddick's guys are all shooting at him, you're still kind of rooting for him. Like, everything he does is in a heroic way, right? Like, even when he, at the end of the movie, where he walks into the diner, shoots the girl, and throws the two grenades, it's shot in such a way where he's, like, the hero. But then when you get to the high school, it's automatically that she is the hero of the story.
I don't think we're supposed to think that he's the hero when he shoots that girl and blows up the diner.
I'm not saying that we're told that he's the hero. I'm saying it is shot in such a gusto sort of way that it's like it's reveling in his accomplishments to kill all of Reddick's guys and to get out of there and to accomplish what he needs to accomplish.
I do think that is like one of the really like kind of brilliant things about the movie, to show this guy that we kind of like throughout the movie, and to then make this turn, but to then not hide from the evil things he does. He kills the mom, kills the dad, kills Kristen. You know, all these are characters that we kind of like, that we, you know, I mean, that we don't, haven't seen bad things about. So it's like, to show it in like sort of an unfettered way, I think is like very interesting. To just like, you're all right, like not showing it as heroic, but just like, just showing it just straight up as like, yeah, this guy's like a murderer.
Well, the two sides of it too is the two audience perspective of the girl knowing that that he killed both of her parents, and the boy, where he thinks he's like a cool big brother that's helping him out against like the bullies. Yeah, it's like, which side are you on?
No, right. No, I agree. I mean, I think I love him in the first half and I regret his actions in the second half. But the one thing I want to say about, you know, bringing up It Follows coming out in the same year is like, this was like finding out, like seeing these two movies from Michael Monroe, like that, where she's the star of, and just like looking at her IMDb too, she like, she has this kind of like pretty cool, like indie career where she does a lot of these movies that like I only know of because she's in them. Right. And she's like starring in them. And they're always like, I know we both loved It Follows. Right. And I know that you at least like this one. It's just like this, like, she's like a pretty gifted actress who has like, is like kind of carrying these like movies that are like very interesting. Like I'm looking at a bunch of these other, like Villains is one where I keep seeing the poster for, and I'm like, that just looks interesting. And because she's in it and because I've seen It Follows and The Guest, I'm like, I would watch that. Like, why wouldn't I watch that? You know what I mean?
But what's Villains about?
I don't know. It's the poster has her head and this other guy's head on pikes, on fence posts. It's her and Bill Skarsgård.
Oh shit. Yeah. It's a movie that has yet to come out, or
it came out in 2019. Let's just fucking do it soon. After a pair of amateur criminals break into a suburban home, they stumble upon a dark secret that two sadistic homeowners will do anything to keep them from getting out.
Oh, you know what? I've heard of this. I didn't know it was called Villains. I've heard of this. Or and unless...
it's got your guy Jeffrey Donovan from Burn Notice.
I know what movie this is. Yeah. So one thing about her acting is that it's much better in It Follows than this film.
I actually think the acting in this is like pretty natural. The scene where she is on the swing set with Zeke, I actually noticed and was like, no, like it's actually like really good.
I'm not saying that like the whole movie is bad. You know, I'm not even saying like the, like she's a bad actress in this. I'm just saying that there's a few times where I don't feel it.
Well, when she's like falling, when she like, you know, is almost coming at the sight of Dan Stevens without a shirt on, I was like, it's a bit like, it's purposely like a little bit over the top and overacted.
Dan Stevens also has a weird IMDb because he was Beast in Beauty and the Beast live action.
Well, and he was also, I think he was in Downton Abbey before this, and that was like part of the reason they chose him was because it was like a total like kind of 180 for him, like to be in this role. We've done a lot of like global talking. I want to get into the plot. So, you know, we've already talked about how like kind of all the setup of this, right? You know, their son died, and then Micah is dating this guy Zeke, but she doesn't want everyone else to know about it. And then the dad comes home, and at first he's like, I don't fucking want this guy here. What if he has PTSD? And I love, once again, David is sort of just sitting there like laughing about it, just like, you know, whatever happens, like if they make me leave, I'll just leave. You know, he fucking ran all the way here, like he'll just run back to the bus station. And then the dad like offers him a beer and starts telling him about, you know, the guy that stole his job. And oh yeah, Luke has gotten beat up at school at this point. But really, like, the movie starts to pick up the next day when David goes to school and picks up Luke. And he just sort of sits there and looks like, what's going on? He's like, I want you to show me who hit you. And he's like, well, no, I got hit by football. And he's like, I think earlier when he told him, he's like, I got hit by football. He's like, yeah, that could have happened.
That works. That works.
Yeah. But then he points out the guys, and then it goes to the bar scene, which like may be one of my favorite scenes in this movie.
So the bar scene is cool. However, you have to think of this like in a real world situation where this 30-year-old man just went in and beat the shit out of a bunch of high schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not right.
It's pretty fucking awesome, though.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, you know, another thing is like all of these guys' ages are kind of weird to me, because it's like, when he's having sex, when Dan Stevens is having sex with the
Kristen,
the sister's friend, Kristen.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a 30-year-old guy having sex with a high schooler. That's creepy. But then I'm like, oh, no, wait. Anna and Kristen are like in their 20s.
Right.
And they're like in college or whatever. They're past high school. And I keep thinking that the kid, that the brother is in like middle school, because and the way Hollywood does their shit is that you're always like casting older for younger. But when you actually have like the kid who's actually 16 playing a 16-year-old and the girl who's actually 23 playing a 20-year-old, you're like, okay, like, you know, I mean, Dan Stevens is the only one. I think if he served 2 years in the military, he got into it when he was 18. So he should be in the movie like 24, 25,
right?
Maybe even 26. But at that time, he was 31. I think that's why it kind of threw me off.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's not his actual age. This is like the whole Love Actually thing where people are like, Keira Knightley was 17. That movie's so disgusting. It's like, I mean, she could have been playing a 19-year-old. You know what I mean? Like, maybe she has the range. She can play 2 years older. Who knows? I love the bar scene just because it's just fucking badass, right? Like, I like him ordering the drinks, and the guy's like, well, maybe you should order their fellas drinks. He's like, does it look like I want to buy their fellas drinks? He's like, it might be the polite thing to do.
Well, the whole thing is like, the somehow these high schoolers are in it, are like in cahoots with the bartender. Like, the owner of the bar is okay with like not letting them be ID'd and stuff.
Well, that's just money, right? That's just a money thing.
But he was going to ID the kid.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's because like, yeah, the regulars, they come there a lot. I mean, the kid looks a lot younger than the other kids do, right? So, he also has this line, like, Luke's like, dude, are you rich or something? Because he pulls out like this roll of money, and he's like, cash is so easy to get. And it reminds me, one time we went out with some friends, and this friend of a friend came, and he was just like, it wasn't even pompous. It was just like, it was someone who was just like not of this world. He was just like, yeah, it's just like money just like comes to me. And I was like, oh my fucking goodness, like, what does that even mean?
And then as the night went and you hung out with him longer, he just kept finding like fives and tens on the ground.
It's like, you just pulled that out of your wallet. It's the same five. And then, yeah, it's just a great beatdown scene. And I like at the end when he's like, hey, just tell them the truth. These underage kids that are, and it's basically like threatening him with, these kids are underage, so if you call the cops and tell them what really happened, it's still going to come out that you served underage people and your bar is fucked. So you can't tell on me.
Yeah. Well, I also love, like, he ordered like the spiciest drink and it just looked like it was all Tabasco sauce. And then the cool moment is like when the kids go over to his table and they splash the Cosmo in his face and he wipes it off. You can see that there's this turn on him, right? There's this turn that's like, ha ha, you're fucking dead.
Like, you gave me exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. And then he throws the drink in their face and then fucking, I'm pretty sure because of all the sound elements that happened in that scene, he broke every single one of their noses and then maybe like a few of their legs. Do you know how hard you have to hit someone in the back to break a billiards cue on them?
We like can try.
Cue stick? Yeah, yeah.
Just some Mythbusters.
But I'm pretty sure he broke that kid's spine.
It's not that hard.
I'm pretty sure he crippled these high school kids. But also, they can never play football again.
We only saw like one of them at school the next day, which I want to talk about that scene when we get to it. So the next scene is the party, and you know, he goes because the mom makes Anna invite him, and this is when he walks out of the towel and the out of the bathroom in the towel, and she just like is speechless, which I mean, you know, pretty good.
She's never seen a grown man's abs before.
He's in pretty good shape. Apparently, so he came into his like audition for this.
Like that?
Was, no, like pretty underweight for a different role. And they gave it to him, but they're like, you need to work out. And so he worked out for like 3 months before the movie started. And then they filmed that scene last so he could work out for another 2 months just to get like in that shape for this. He put on like 25 pounds of muscle, which he's still like pretty lean, but
yeah,
he looked good. And they go to the party and she's like, don't talk about Zeke. And he's like, I won't say anything. It's none of my business. And then she gets like really concerned about the weed. And I love when she's like, oh, I can't smoke in front of him. And I can't. And then, you know, it gets offered to him and she's like, oh, don't do that. And then he just takes it. And she's just like, you smoke weed? And I thought about it. I was like, this is like such an old movie. Because it's like 2022.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah. The scene before that where he's talking to Kristen in the kitchen and her ex-boyfriend comes in. I just want to tell you, I don't know if Adam Wingard got bullied in high school, but he's really making it feel like every boy that age is a fucking asshole. But when her boyfriend comes over and like grabs her arm and he grabs his arm and the how quick he just smashes his head against the wall, Kristen doesn't flinch. Like, I thought it was going to be a scene where like everyone scatters. Everyone's like, whoa, what the fuck is your problem? But everyone was just like chill with it. And then his buddies took him away and Kristen was like, yeah, let's fuck.
Let's fuck immediately. Yeah, I mean, I don't even think she needed that to happen to be ready, but that definitely helped. And then she's like, you're not really into this. And then he like pulls her over and then like holds her arms down. She's like, oh, I'm into it.
You know, I wonder too if his military training just doesn't let him like enjoy sex anymore. Like, I guess maybe the entire time he's worried about Anna. So he's like constantly thinking like the most strategic move in the moment. And he was like, oh, god damn. Yeah, let me have sex with you. Fuck your brains out. And then we can like get back to the plot of the movie.
I mean, he definitely has an infatuation with Anna, even from this part, right? Like,
so originally I thought it was like something like where he served in the military with Caleb. He ended up, I thought it was going to reveal that he killed Caleb.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
So I thought it was going to reveal that. And then, you know what, in the fire that he set, he might have actually killed Caleb. He might have felt guilty from killing him, and that's why he comes to resolve with his family. I don't know. But I thought he killed him in more of a malicious manner, and then he, like, saw a picture of his sister that Caleb was maybe carrying around or something, and he was like, her.
I mean, yeah, like a
gonna go after her
like a Halloween situation.
Yeah.
So she then gets in a fight with her boyfriend and they have to leave. But I do like before that the scene with Craig where he's like, hey, we support you. And he's like, support us how? He's like, you know, like America and shit. And he's like, but you wouldn't enlist. And I love, he's like, I got asthma, kind of makes it hard too. And he's like, hard to what? And I think he's actually like annoyed with him, but then he just like turns it off. You know what I mean? He's like,
he realizes where he's at.
He's yeah. Just like, I'm just fucking with you. But he's also like, I'm going to kill you soon.
Yeah, man. I mean, that scene where they're out in the middle of the desert thing with the guns. And he's like, I'll take them. All of them? I'll take all of them. All the handguns? All your guns. It's like, yeah, man, if you have enough cash for it, sure. He's like, no, I'm just going to take your guns.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
And I love Craig's like, what the fuck, David?
And I love how the gun dealer has only one bullet in his gun because he probably thinks to himself, he's like, one bullet's all I need. And it actually works out. Like, Well, it works out until it doesn't, right? But I don't know why you would ever bring ammo to a gun deal.
Well, at least have it like, yeah, I don't know. At least don't be a bitch who can have your gun taken from you so quickly, you know? Don't pull it on someone that close.
Don't, yeah, but you can't say that because it's established in the movie that he is like a trained killing machine.
Here's a rule of thumb, though, for everyone listening, though. If someone says, oh, I'm just going to take them and kill you, don't pull the gun out to just point it. Just pull the gun out and shoot. Like
immediately. yeah.
At that point, I think you're pretty in the clear from a self-defense perspective when someone's like, I'm going to kill you right now.
But, however, we have seen, like, because of the rest of this movie, that even if the dude pulls out the gun and shoots him point blank, might not have even done anything.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not. Balls of
how indestructible is David?
So he's not indestructible. He just doesn't feel pain. They so if you read a little bit of the backstory, they turned off his pain receptors, but that also turned off his like his empathy, his fear, his right versus wrong. So that's why he's just able to like, if needed, he'll kill people that he even likes, just because, you know, that's the ultimate goal is survival. Going back to it, so, you know, they leave the party and, you know, he has this line where he's like, if you were my girl, I would have never even enlisted. And she's like, oh, thank you. And then she makes him like the mixtape. He's like, can you put this song on there? And she's like, she's so into him at this point, right?
She is so wet right now. I love the turn of the movie when she's like making the mixtape and then she hears his phone call about dental records. So she goes through this whole thing where she contacts the military to like check on this guy. And when she becomes super suspicious of him, she never gives him the mixtape. She has it like in her room. So when he goes to visit her room, he's like, is this the mixtape you made me? And she's like, yeah. He's like, can I take it? She's like, yeah. Like, she's defeated in that moment.
Yeah.
But I just love how much of an upper hand he thinks he has on her, you know?
Yep. So we then get to the introduction to Lance, and these scenes to me have always felt like a little like out of place. And it turns out they were tacked on like after they had to cut a bunch of other stuff, they did another test and people were like, oh, well, now we're a little bit confused. And so these scenes were added. So it like at least made a little bit more sense where he's just talking to the guy and he's like, oh, you know, Anna Peterson called. He's like, of Caleb Peterson, like get me on a plane right now or we're both fucked. And then the gun scene is next, which we talked about. And the only thing I want to say is like, this is the turning point where you're like, oh, this guy's just fucking evil, right? Like, this is a guy that we've liked up until now.
So before the gun scene, you're made aware that the dad's boss was murdered.
Not yet.
You have to, because then it's like the very next scene where Anna gets the call from her boyfriend who's getting arrested that that his friend is dead. And then it's like putting two to two together. It's like two people that are seemingly connected to you in some way throughout your family ends up dead within the same 24-hour period. Like, that's suspicious.
Well, so the gun scene happens, and then the next scene we're at the house, and Anna goes to the mom to start telling her, and then the dad walks to the door, and he like throws his stuff down, and they're like, the dad's like, hey, yeah, my boss just fucking died. They found him in his house with pills. So they think it's a suicide because there's no like forced entry. He's like, but also I got his job, which is pretty sweet. And like the mom's like, the dad says earlier that like, you know, she doesn't believe in me that I'll ever make enough money. And so he just says like, oh yeah, my fucking boss and his girlfriend just committed suicide, but they're still investigating. And he's like, but I got the job. And you can see like the hiding her like excitement. She's like, so how much? And she's like, I'm gonna get paid what he got paid.
So I can also die.
Yep.
You know, okay, so yeah. So then that scene happens, and then like I guess the next day she gets a call from her boyfriend And then he's getting arrested right then and there because David has obviously put in some sort of tip line that he's a drug dealer, yada, yada, yada. And then when he's getting arrested and he's in jail, his one phone call is to her, which is kind of stupid, but it's to her to say, hey, I also learned that my friend is dead. And I think that's when Anna kind of puts everything together and she's like, oh, shit.
Well, so the first phone call, she finds out Craig was dead, and that happens around the same time the dad's boss. And then the second call when she's in her room, because she like takes a pictures of his phone, right?
Oh, that's right. Is that the gun was planted in his car.
The gun was planted. And I like the detail of like, yeah, the gun was, it was wiped. And she's like, well, you didn't do it. You're innocent. And he's like, yeah, I know that. So it's almost like the movie admits like, yeah, he probably, that charge isn't going to hold up. He's like, but they found all my drugs and those charges will hold up.
I'm going to be here a while is what he says.
And so then she just goes to her family and she's like, you know, hey.
Oh yeah, she explodes and he's like right there in the kitchen and the way he like holds the kitchen knife. Oh
yeah, he like God. Pulls it up. Yeah. It's like the movie is one playing with us, right? Like, oh, is he going to snap here? Is he going to snap here? But it's also like the movie's not just playing with us. I think in his head, he's like, he is having the thought like, should I kill them all now? And he's like, no, I can still get out of it. And I like these people. And at one point, Anna had gone to her friend Kristen, who told her to get the phone numbers. There's also this line in there, which I think is really funny. So they're carving the pumpkins and David's like, oh, this knife sucks. And he takes out like a butterfly knife. And Kyle's like, do you just like have that on you? He's like, yeah, you know, just in case. And then he hands him the knife and he's like, if those kids beat you up, take a knife to school. If they take your knife, burn their house down with their families in it.
What's the worst that can happen? But he's like, he says, what's the worst that can happen?
And I do like this part of it where later on it's explained that like the brother knows he's a bad guy, but he doesn't care because he's helped him out. It's not Luke. It's Luke, not Kyle. I think I said Kyle earlier. So yeah. And this is when he takes the CD and then Anna finds out about the plastic surgeon that we talked about and she gets Luke to look it up. And then this is the scene where he goes to school to look it up. And another one of my favorite scenes, but why does that kid fuck around with Luke after Luke's friend beat the shit out of him? It's so stupid.
Cause it's dumb, but I guess he could be like, oh, your friend isn't around you. Like your friend isn't here now, is he? You know?
Yeah. And then he calls him the gay slur. He hits him. He gets hit back. And then he takes the ruler and breaks it across his jaw. And the scene with the principal is so fucking good.
It's one of my favorite scenes of the movie.
He's like, a gay student finally defends himself. And you're going to what? Suspend him? And he's like,
well, that's a hate crime.
And he's like, well, we could consider suspension. He's like, no, you can't because we're suing. And the principal's like, what the fuck? I didn't even know he was gay.
My favorite part of that scene, it's a great scene. My favorite part of the scene where he looks at the mom and he's like, we're going to call our lawyers. And the mom looks at him like, we don't have any lawyers.
Well, and also the mom's just like, I'll let this play out. This seems to be going okay. It'd be funny if she was like, I didn't know Luke was gay either. I love at the end when the principal's like, and you, I'm sorry, who are you? And he's like, I'm a friend of the family.
So do you feel like a friend of the family is what this movie originally was titled and then they changed it? Because the way he delivers that line is definitely in the trailer, right?
I'm the house guest. Yeah, no.
I'm the guest.
Starring me.
Me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think friend of the family does not work out as a title. The guest is just really good.
Yeah, but I could see how like
working title
was friend of the family.
And so then right after this, we get Luke basically like, Luke is such a fucking idiot.
Oh my God. I hate Luke.
In his defense, like he does believe that Dan Stevens, like really does like them because of all these things he's done. Cause he's like, you know, Anna told me about this. You think, David's like, you think I killed Craig? And he's like, I don't care. He's like, you killed dad, my dad's boss, though. I know that, right? And he's like, and I know you're not David Collins because I've, you know, I looked it up. And he's like, but we're friends. I'm not going to tell anyone. And he's like got this look on his face of like, I'm going to kill you. And he's like, but we're friends, right? And he goes, breaks into a smile. Yeah, exactly.
Another part where I hate Luke is he kind of signs Kristen's death sentence right there, right? Because yeah, he knows? Like, and it's insane. It's insane. Like, I can forgive Luke for pretty much everything else, but that this is like the epitome of stupidity right here is where he knows he killed his dad's boss. He knows he killed his sister's boyfriend. Friend of the boyfriend. And he knows all this, right? And yeah, he doesn't care because he thinks they're friends and they're fine. But he knows he's a murderer. So when he goes, does anyone else know about this? And he goes, oh, Anna told her friend Kristen, who works at the diner.
Yeah.
Like, does he hate Kristen? Like, is that... It's like, Luke is like, could you get rid of this bitch for me too while you're at it?
She wouldn't give me a hand, Jay, the other day. So, yeah, What's interesting is basically the next scene when he is doing laundry or, you know, taking down the laundry from the lines with the mom, which is also just like a funny thing. That like,
well, can I ask you why the clothes are dry?
I think they're taking them down, aren't they?
And putting them up.
Oh, whatever. I don't know. It's just a cool scene because of the way the thing whips out of the way and they see David and he drops the laundry and he pulls out the gun. And he shoots two dudes in the head. That's why it's there.
I think Adam Wingard is just so worried about getting the next coolest shot that he doesn't give a shit about if you think the laundry should be wet or not.
Probably. But what I think is interesting is like, he doesn't start killing people then. He's like, okay, I'll take all this information, but he doesn't start killing people then. The major shows up and that's when he's like, now I have to start killing everybody.
It's crazy how slow everyone's fucking reflexes are and how fucking wicked fast his is.
Well, I mean, yeah, you know, he's the shit. Yeah, like when he goes out from underneath the bed.
Yep, yep.
But also he shoots the guy in the foot, the guy drops down, and then he opens his eyes, he's like, no!
Or the way he, like, launches himself out from under the bed is, like, there's, like, definitely some sort of contrap. Like, he just pushes.
So he's spring-loaded.
Now, there's a few deaths in here where I was like, I actually don't mind this. And the mom is actually a death that I don't mind. Wow. because she was safe. She was with them. Then the bullets started flying and she ran away like a fucking idiot just to get killed anyways.
Yeah.
And then I feel bad for the dad because the dad was literally coming home from work. Like, he had no idea why any of this was happening. But he had to crash into the... I mean, I'm sure he didn't have to crash into the dad, but he probably thought that was the quickest way to kill him. Although now he's without a car. What he should have done is he should have gotten off the side of the road when he saw the dad coming, waved him down, the dad would have stopped, and then shot him and took his car.
Obviously. I think, too, it's like, if he knew everything that we knew, he didn't need to kill the mom and dad. Because they didn't know about, like, the only secret he really needs to keep from these people now is the plastic surgery stuff.
Right.
Because the military know everything else. They know he was here. So he kills the mom and dad because maybe they know about that. Maybe they'll know about it. But really, he just needs to kill the kids, which is funny because those are the two people that he doesn't kill.
And it's also kind of sad, right? Like it sets up this... sad. Well, it sets up this whole thing where the mom can't get over her dead son and the dad, I think they hint a little bit of him being an alcoholic and stuff like that. And then none of these plot points or none of these characters get their arc. Like, nothing comes of this. They just die. I saw this meme where it was like an A24 film, how to make an A24 film. And yeah. And I'm not, I know this isn't an A24 film, but it reminds me a little bit like Adam Wingard's early stuff, like You're Next and this kind of remind me of like a Blumhouse, like early Blumhouse, early A24 sort of stuff.
Yeah, I get it.
And it was like how to make an A24 film. And it was bring up themes, like bring up really good themes throughout the movie, and then don't let any of them pay off in the end.
I guess. I think the themes in Everything Everywhere All at Once pay off.
No, I think they were talking mostly about earlier A24 films when they weren't like great, but now they're great. But no, I mean, it is sad. Like, the whole thing is kind of sad, and it kind of just makes you think about, like, what was the point of any of this? Because at the end of it, those kids don't have a parent anymore, and he's still alive walking around. And what's kind of crazy is that they learn nothing. It's not like she had self-image, or it's not like the, I don't even know what I'm saying. It's not like the kids had some sort of like deficiency in their life and they needed this to like work through it. They didn't need any of this.
I mean, this is a horror movie, right? So there isn't any like arcs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in that relation, yeah, it's a lot like a horror movie with no arcs, but when he walks away, I thought they were going to end the movie where they're like sitting in the ambulance. She recognizes him dressed as a firefighter, right? She's like, oh shit. And she like immediately pulls out a gun and starts shooting him or something.
You know, kind of one of the darker things to me this time, you know, because I have kids now, is Lance gets Anna out of the diner and then David pulls up right after. He pulls up in a minivan with blood spatter on the windshield. So he's like, he probably just killed like a mom, you know, with like little kids. And I was the idea of taking this guy who for most of the movie, you're just like, I fucking love this guy, like kicking the ass of these bullies, right? And then kicking the ass of this guy who's like probably abusive to his girlfriend. And then it just like turns, right?
Yeah.
And so he blows up the diner after just shooting Kristen. The way he throws the grenades is like, you were like kind of super like hero-ish, but it was just like so flamboyant, just like he was taking a bow as he did it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I meant. Like it's almost like making Mike Myers likable and then but still having the ending to the Halloween series, you know?
Yeah. So then right after this we get like exposition at the end of the movie, which I think is pretty funny. Like he explains the medical, you know, Lance explains the medical program, how he burned the bodies. And so we thought we had him, but then we lost the trail because of the way he burned the bodies. It tells that the parents are dead. So, and then we get introduced to this character, which has like intentionally funny lines, but like, it's not like jokes, but so Luke gets a call and this teacher's like, hey, I thought, you know, we aren't supposed to have your phone. So he like takes it away, right? So then they start going through this maze and they're like, how do we get through here? And he's like, left, right, 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 left, 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 right, left, right. Do you get it? And he's like, yeah. And then the guy's like, you're interrupting detention, which I think is very funny. Just like that guy has like some pretty like good lines.
He does.
And then we get these like final scenes. And so, the major gets killed and
in a house of mirrors.
Yeah. Which the teacher had just gotten killed. And then David walks up to him and he says, you shouldn't have followed me. I don't know what you expected. And it is kind of like, it's a, like a very like badass line of like, you guys aren't going to be able to kill me. Like, I don't know why you thought you could, which is funny. Cause he says that. And then he almost gets killed by like two, a high school student and a 20-year-old waitress, like with no experience whatsoever.
The part where she abandons her shoes in the fog is one of the best things I've seen in like a last girl standing in a horror movie thing to do. And then she like comes up behind him, which is all for naught because he knows she's behind him and she shoots him, but then he does the fucking same thing but like with his entire body. He like hides in the thing and then he just rolls
the fog
out.
Right, there's yeah, there just happens to be a fog machine that's been going this whole time. Well, I like she's like tricks him with the shoes, which I was like, did you just like watch a ton of spy movies? Like, what, you know, even like with the blood, steps in the blood.
Well, did you notice that, like, in the beginning when we established Luke having the phone and the teacher's like, no, no, no phone, the fog machine wasn't on at that point. It was only when like all the characters were in that in the auditorium that the production decided to turn the fog machine on.
Well, you could think that David turned it on, right? Because he's trying to make this, you know.
He wasn't in there yet. Like when Lance and the kids were running through, that's when it was on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then another couple things, like before we even start getting the kill, or no, right after the major and the teacher gets killed, Luke is like, I don't know what's going on, but David wouldn't hurt us. And she's like, Luke, he killed mom and dad. He's like, no, you're making that up. He wouldn't do, he's our friend.
Luke's a moron. But you know, when David gave him the knife, it reminded me of the setup in Your Next where, like a bunch of stuff was set up in Your Next. Yep. Like things are placed in certain areas where you're like, oh, that's definitely going to come into play later on. As soon as he mentioned the knife and giving it to Luke, I was like, oh, that's going to be the killing blow. Like that has to be.
Well, and two of my like favorite parts of this ending are, so when he says, when he follows her shoes and then looks down and see, or follows the blood and then sees her shoes just sitting there, he has this smile on his face like, ah, she fucking got me. And he turns around, he turns around and gets shot, right? So then he's strangling her after he stabs her. And then Luke comes up and stabs him. And then he turns around and he's kind of got a smile on his face and he just sort of stands there, right?
Yeah.
He could kill Luke. And he lets Luke stab him in the stomach. And he's just like a prideful parent of like, look what I fucking taught this pussy.
So when he has the knife in his chest, he falls onto the haystack. He's like, looks at Luke. This is the most memeable moment in the whole movie where he thumbs him up and he goes, I'm not mad. Don't feel bad about this.
I'm proud of you. You should have done that. And then this, you know, right after this, they're outside. They think it's all over. And, you know, this movie, right? We talked about like the homages to like other Halloween movies with the music and stuff like that. But then just basically this guy becomes Mike Myers, right? But the guys outside are like, yeah, so there's two guys. We found two guys in there. They're both pretty badly burned. And one of the guys, all of his teeth are missing. You're like, oh, my God. And yeah. He walks out. And this, for the second time in the last three movies we've done, it ends with a woman saying, what the fuck, to end the movie. Like, same as Swiss Army Man.
What was the movie before that?
No, Swiss Army Man. And then this one ends that way.
Oh, only two. Oh, I thought you said three.
I said two out of three because we have also done
Moon.
If only
there's no women in Moon.
If only Sam Rockwell. There's the wife.
I guess. From the past, from the grave, she looks at all of this and she goes, what the fuck?
Or the daughter. Or the daughter when the
daughter notices when the clone shows up.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Kevin Spacey. What the fuck?
What the fuck, Sam? That was good.
That's good. Good job.
So overall, what did you think of The Guest?
I mean, look, it's good for what it is. But what it is a low budget thriller slash horror movie. And it's not really my cup of tea, those kind of movies are. So, you know, I'm not the best one to give it the best rating. But it's good for what it is. I just think that it suffers from the things that I've mentioned before, where it's corny at times and the acting is so-so and there's a lot of plot holes. But if you can get over those sort of things, then, you know, I think where this movie really shines is the twist and the switch of perspective going from Dan Stevens to what's her name? Micah Monroe. That's cool. And there's a lot of cool scenes. Like you said, like it has this feeling of like two college guys getting together with like $1 million budget and then just like making cool shit happen. Although I have to probably assume that this movie probably didn't even budget at $1 million.
It's $5 million.
Oh, okay. So I was underestimating. But yeah, I mean, it's good in its own world. But I wouldn't have given it a 92 on Rotten Tomatoes.
So this movie is a masterpiece.
Oh my God.
It is pretty fucking amazing. It's very badass. And it deserved. It deserved that 92.
This is coming from a guy who likes Grind. So
Grind's also good. The people love Grind. So many people who I know in real life, when we did that episode, were like, fucking Grind. I love it. Oh, and people will say the same about this. They're like, The Guest. I talked to my dad about it. I was like, have you seen The Guest? He's like, you know, and I described it a little bit to him. He's like, yeah, I liked it. It's like a weird fucking movie, though. So that's my dad's review. Anyway, thanks for listening to another episode of I Finally Watched. This is David.
And it's Salon, and I finally watched The Guest.